NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods. And here for Indicators of the Week, we have two very special guests from Planet Money, Sarah Gonzalez and Kenny Malone. Welcome.
Hey.
The crossover event of the century, Darian.
Glad to have you guys. And what a time to be on the show. I mean, there is so much going on. There's all kinds of weird and unexpected effects ricocheting around the global economy right now. What have we got on the show today?
We got the story of a nickel magnate losing $2 billion in a bet.
Yeah, and we are now seeing U.S. negotiators looking to make deals with oil-producing countries that would have been unimaginable months ago.
And on top of that, there is this emblem of American capitalism that is packing up and leaving post-Soviet Russia. We're going to hear a lot more about that with some old tape after the break.
Good old tape tease.
Good old-fashioned yeah. old tape.
All right, Indicators of the Week with Kenny Malone and Sarah Gonzalez. Kenny Malone, I'm going to start with you. What is your Indicator of the Week?
Yeah, okay. My indicator is 850. 850 is the number of McDonald's restaurants in Russia, all of which, as you may have heard, McDonald's will be closing, temporarily at least.
Yeah, I've seen some reports on this, yeah.
Now, of course, McDonald's is just one of a bunch of companies imposing these kinds of corporate sanctions on Russia. But this one carries a lot of symbolic weight.
Yeah, the Golden Arches.
Yeah, the Golden Arches first appeared in Moscow in 1990. This is when the Soviet Union was starting to crumble. And in January of 1990, like, the world's media descended upon Moscow, including NPR.
The first McDonald's opened today in Moscow, the biggest McDonald's store in the world. Hamburgers are rare in the Soviet Union. And today we are told one customer there tried to eat his with a spoon.
With a spoon?
McDonald's in Moscow was a sign that the Soviet Union was moving on from communism and that the world was thawing out of this Cold War. And then shortly after this big moment in the 90s, this is when political commentator Thomas Friedman proposed this sort of infamous half-joke of a theory known as the Golden Arches theory of conflict. I suspect one of you has heard this before, yes?
I have heard about it. Remind me, though.
Basically stated, it is that two countries with a McDonald's have never been at war with each other.
No way.
Again, yes, it's not literally true. It is a bit of a joke. But the bigger idea here is that the more economically developed and intertwined countries become, then the less likely it is that they're going to go to war. Because if you think about it, like, their incentives are becoming more aligned.
Yeah.
The cost of cutting themselves out of the global economy gets higher and higher. And, you know, to some degree, we are seeing this in Russia. Because over the last 30 years, Russia has become more integrated into the global economy. And there are now all of these economic weapons that the rest of the world can use against Russia. And so Russia is paying a huge economic price to wage this war.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some reports that Russia is the most sanctioned country in the world right now.
Right. But I do think what is particularly sad about this indicator, these, you know, 850 McDonald's closures as an indicator, is that it is a bit of a reality check on a maybe naive, rosy optimism around the Golden Arches thinking. Like, if the world does come together and get on the same economic team, it certainly helps. It gives us sanction levers to pull, but it clearly was not enough to stop something truly, truly horrible from happening in this case with Russia.
Yeah, I mean, the last 2 weeks have really put these theories up against cold, harsh reality. Thanks for that, Kenny.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the next indicator. Sarah Gonzalez, what do you have?
My indicator is a teeny little 3%. So this week, President Joe Biden said that to continue punishing Russia for invading and attacking Ukraine, the U.S. would no longer buy and import Russian oil, Russian gas, Russian coal, other Russian petroleum products. There is an import ban. And the point of this is to make sure that the U.S. isn't buying things from Russia that Vladimir Putin then uses to fund his war in Ukraine, right? So let's just focus on the oil imports part of it. The U.S. doesn't actually get all that much oil from Russia, just 3%. So it's not a huge amount. And just to put this 3% into context, Germany gets like 30% of its crude oil imports from Russia. Italy, the Netherlands rely on Russian oil. The U.S. does not.
That might explain why the U.S. has kind of moved first out of the big countries stopping oil imports.
Well, that said, according to the White House, the import ban will deprive Russia of billions of dollars in revenue annually. So it is a powerful, expensive little 3%, and U.S. consumers are going to feel it too. Biden said this ban on Russian oil will drive up gas prices, which are already out of control. Like, it's almost $6 a gallon in L.A. where I live. It's ridiculous. So, okay, if we're not going to get oil from Russia anymore, we just got to find some other place in the world to get our oil from.
Where do you think that will be?
Everything is replaceable. So, like, Venezuela, it has oil, but the U.S. has had these oil trading sanctions on Venezuela because of government corruption and human rights abuses. But recently, some White House people went to Caracas, Venezuela for these talks. And the White House has said that energy security was a part of those talks, so oil. And then Iran had been a possible oil source. The U.S. and China and Russia and a bunch of other European countries have been trying to renegotiate the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran. It would lift some of the sanctions the U.S. has on Iran, including the sanctions the U.S. has on a bunch of Iranian oil. But those talks just came to a screeching halt because now Russia is making some new demands.
Wow, so that basically set a whole year of negotiations backwards. I guess there is always the U.S. The U.S. produces a lot of oil and it could do more, but that would go against the long-run plan of moving away from oil and investing in green energy.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, there is also bad news on the green energy front, in case you were thinking that a lot of these costs could be avoided by switching to electric vehicles. A key metal for making electric car batteries is skyrocketing in price. That is going to be my indicator.
Skyrocketing is your indicator? Just like up?
Everything is up right now. That's all you need to know.
So Russia supplies a lot of the world's metals. So since its invasion of Ukraine, all kinds of metals have gone up in price. And the metal with maybe the award for the biggest jump in price this week is nickel. It makes stainless steel. It's an alloy. And the highest grade nickel is used for making batteries, including most electric car batteries in the US. So Russia contributes 1/6 of the world's high-grade nickel.
Oh, that's a lot. So if you go into like a, I don't know, electric vehicle showroom, I see 6 cars. One of them is going to be in deep trouble because of this.
Yeah, that's a really good illustration. So this is a big problem if you want to buy an electric car. But this is even more of a problem for one particular Chinese nickel tycoon, Xiang Guangda. He owns a giant nickel mining company. He also goes by the nickname Big Shot.
Nice.
Self-anointed Big Shot? Can you go by Big Shot?
I don't know if Big Shot is such a big shot these days. In just a few hours earlier this week, the price of nickel doubled. And you'd think that would be a good thing for a nickel tycoon, right? But it was not. It was disastrous because for whatever reason, Big Shot, Xiang Guangda, had been doing what's known as short selling the price of nickel. And the way that this worked was that Xiang Guangda borrowed somebody else's nickel, essentially, and sold it on the market, hoping that the price would drop. And if the price did drop, he would swoop in, buy that nickel at the lower price, give it back to that person that he borrowed that nickel from, and he'd pocket the difference. With me so far?
So he's expecting the price of nickel to go down. He's going to buy it when it gets lower. But no, the opposite is happening. The price keeps going up.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the problem. And so as the price for a pound of nickel rocketed up within a few hours on Monday, it went so high that on Tuesday, the London Metal Exchange suspended nickel trading. And that was terrible for Xiang Guangda's company. At the height of this madness, it's estimated that Guangda's company might have lost up to $2 billion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I was distracted. I was just pulling up Billy Joel's Big Shot.
And in order to actually use that song, Kenny, you have to comment on the song. So give us a fact.
Yes. That's right. This part I love, and listen to it, and it was written about Billy Joel's ex. There, I commented. Because you had to be a
big shot. This episode of The Indicator was produced by Jamila Huxtable with help from Josh Newell. It was fact-checked by Corey Bridges. Viet Le is our senior producer. Kate Kincannon edits the show. And The Indicator is a production of NPR.